As you can see from what's on the screen right now, our subject is thoughts on Isaiah 35. There is provided in this 35th chapter of Isaiah a glorious vista of the future. Christ will have returned. The judgments upon the saints completed. Judgments upon the enemies of the truth destroyed. And a rebuilding will have commenced. Let's read Isaiah 35. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them. And the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen ye the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong. Fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out and streams in the desert. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons, where each lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes. And an highway shall be there, and a way. And it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. Verse 1 begins. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them. The words, solitary place, carry the meaning of a dry place without springs and streams of water, and as such places without trees and other vegetation. In the scriptures, such phrases express moral or spiritual desert, and thusly aptly expresses the condition of the world prior to the benefits or blessings described later in this chapter. Then we note that the words shall be glad for them. These have the sense that moral desolation will be changed. We note also in verse 1, the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It is noted by some that the desert shall flourish as Eden. Brother Thomas describes Eden in these terms. The earth was a fit and beautiful place of abode. He uses the words gloriously illuminated, verdantly abundant, like unto a mansional estate. In Eden were every kind of lush vegetation as it was well watered. We read in Genesis 2 verse 10, and a river went out of Eden to water the garden, and from thence it was parted and became into four heads. The word blossom is from a Hebrew idiom. Blossoming, it shall blossom, and carries the meaning of to burst in bloom. Indeed, the next verse gives us the phrase, blossom abundantly. All this then, opposed to the words written earlier in verse 1, the wilderness and the solitary place. As much development as Israel has enjoyed in recent years, there are still places that are extremely dry and parched and wind swept. Verse 2 continues, the glory of Lebanon shall be given to it. We recall that when Solomon decided to begin construction of the temple at Jerusalem, he wrote to Hiram, king of Sidon. And we read 1 Kings 5, and behold, I propose to build an house unto the name of the Lord my God. As the Lord spake unto David my father, saying, thy son whom I will set upon thy throne in thy room, he shall build an house unto my name. Now therefore, command thou that they hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon, and my servants shall be with thy servants, and unto thee will I give hire for thy servants according to all that thou shalt appoint, for thou knowest that there is not among us any that can skill to hew timber like unto the Sidonians. Lebanon is famous for the abundance of large groves of cedar trees. Indeed, the cedar is synonymous with the present country of Lebanon. In their maturity, cedar trees in Lebanon grow tall and stately, and cedar wood puts off a very, very pleasant aroma. Cedar is used spiritually in Scripture to represent resilience and immortality. Thus, every good quality of the cedar then is now attached to a blossoming wilderness. There is, of course, a spiritual application we might consider as the land of Israel, reclaimed from the northern invader, will have a peace attached to it that can only be attributed to the divine. And it is considered by most naturalists that a grove of cedar trees are one of the best places to meditate. We read in Isaiah 51, for the Lord shall comfort Zion. He will comfort all her waste places and he will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. Hearken unto me, my people, and give ear unto me, O my nation. For a law shall proceed from me, and I will make my judgment to rest for a light of the people. We read also in Psalm 92, beginning at verse 13, those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing to show that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. Jumping down to Psalm 104, we read, he sendeth the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. The wild asses quench their thirst. By them shall the fowls of the heaven have their habitation, which sing among the branches. He watereth the hills from his chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of thy works. Isaiah continues, they shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellency of our God. This, Isaiah 35. Who are we to understand is referred to here? While some have supposed that the they are the returning exiles from Babylon, clearly the prophet has someone more noble in mind. Not long after leaving Egypt, Moses sent 12 spies into the land, and Joshua and Caleb brought back a good report. From Numbers, we read, Numbers 14, and they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we pass through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. At one time, the land of Canaan, the land into which the children of Israel were being led, was a good land, well watered and fruitful. When Jews began to immigrate back to Palestine in the late 1800s, for the most part, it was void of the tall, stately cedars that Solomon planted, and the pasture land was either barren or windswept or marshy and infested with mosquitoes. We know that when Christ and the saints arrived from the south and approached Jerusalem from the east and stand upon the Mount of Olives, a great earthquake will dramatically change the landscape. Isaiah, in the chapter before us, speaks of the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. And as we stand here today, those areas are as fertile and productive as almost anywhere. To answer the question of the they, there will be a remnant of natural Israel that will be reeling from the onslaught of the northern invader. The prophet speaks then to this remnant. Strengthen ye the weak hands. Confirm the feeble knees. They will come to the realization that the living God of Israel is in charge. It is our understanding that when the northern invader presses onto the mountains of Israel and plants their tents upon the glorious mountain, that there will be considerable loss of life. There will be considerable destruction. And for the first time in many, many years, the surviving Jew will come to the realization that all hope is lost. They cannot contend with this northern invader. They cannot escape this scourge that is the Gogian Confederacy. Isaiah then writes in verse 4, 35 verse 4, say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. The children of Israel had, over the course of their history, murmured and complained many, many times. During the period of the judges, after the death of Joshua, they seldom went more than a generation before they fell into idolatrous practices. We read of one example of many in Judges 10 of the depth of their sinful ways. From Judges chapter 10, verse 6, we read, and the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam and Ashtaroth and the gods of Syria and the gods of Zidon and the gods of Moab and the gods of the children of Ammon and the gods of the Philistines and forsook the Lord and served him not. Over the course of 300+ years, for this consistent backsliding, God caused the Canaanites, the Philistines, the Moabites, and the Amorites to overrun Israel and put them under tribute. After the death of Solomon, the kingdom was divided, and while Judah alternated between good and bad kings, the northern kingdom fell into idolatrous ways and eventually were overrun and taken captive by the Assyrians. Judah evidently was overrun by the Babylonians. Eventually was overrun by the Babylonians. Jerusalem was destroyed and the temple stripped of its grandeur, and then it was burned. Through it all, the sinful practices, the idol worship, even the turning away from God, he who had with a strong right arm brought them out of Egypt, he who had given them the land of Canaan, and he who had fought for them against enemies that were greater and stronger than they, through all the times he was very wroth with them, and even when they were taken captive in a strange land, he promised them, I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. Even after all those terrible things that they did, he said, even I will save thee. Though I make a full end of all nations, whither I have scattered thee, Yet will I not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in measure and will not leave thee altogether unpunished." God did indeed punish Israel, first with those nations round about, then with the Assyrians and the Babylonians. He scattered them by the hands of Rome, and then by the hands of Hitler, they were killed off in the most inhumane of ways. But a remnant remained. There remains one more event that needs to be carried out. Bible students have long awaited the Master's return to reestablish God's kingdom. Indeed, even the disciples of Jesus asked, when they were therefore come together, Acts 1:6, they asked of him, saying, "Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel?" This question was on their mind because not many weeks before, as Christ was leaving the confines of Jerusalem, he turned and said to his disciples that even as grand and imposing as the temple structure was, it would be destroyed. To that they asked, when and how could this be? His reply to his disciples then was the same as just before his ascension. "Of that day and hour knoweth no man." No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. He did say there would be signs. From Luke 21, "Woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days, for there shall be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword and shall be led captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nation with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. For the powers of heaven shall be shaken." The Jewish people over their history have suffered from anti-Semitism. This should not be surprising as we recall the words of Moses as he writes in Deuteronomy, "Thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, a byword among all nations, whither the Lord shall lead thee." Thousands were taken captive by the Assyrians, thousands more by the Babylonians, and by some estimates, nearly 1 million were taken by the Romans. Hundreds, possibly thousands, were killed during the Spanish Inquisition. Millions more were killed in German concentration camps during World War II. Now, we have incidents of animosity being leveled at Jews on a daily basis worldwide. Unprecedented scurrilous opinions, even at the political level, both in Europe and in America as well. As Bible students, this should not surprise us, nor should we wonder at the meaning of Christ's words to his disciples, "the end of the age." From Matthew we read, And ye shall hear wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All these are the beginnings of sorrows. We understand also the prophetic implication of Nebuchadnezzar's image. We read in Daniel 2, "Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay." Daniel chapter 2 presents to us a political and military colossus that Ezekiel elaborates on in chapter 38. He writes of an evil thought that enters the mind of Gog, chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and we read, "Thus saith the Lord God, it shall come to pass that at the same time shall things come into thy mind, and thou shalt think an evil thought. And thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls, and having neither bars nor gates, to take a spoil, to take a prey, to turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited, and upon the people that are gathered out of the nations, which have gotten cattle and goods, that dwell in the midst of the land." And then jumping down to verse 15, "And thou shalt come from thy place out of the north parts, thou and many people with thee, all of them riding upon horses, a great company and a mighty army. And thou shalt come up against my people of Israel, as a cloud to cover the land. It shall be in the latter days, and I will bring thee against my land, that the heathen may know me, when I shall be sanctified in thee, O Gog, before their eyes." Well, Isaiah, writing in chapter 35, verse 4, speaking prophetically, is telling those Jews who have been run out of Jerusalem, "Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you." There is found among the Christadelphian body some that advocate a direct response by the living God of Israel. However, I do not think that will be the case. All through the period of the judges, when they were overrun by their enemies, God has raised up from among them men who rose to the occasion and led Israel against those that were stronger and mightier than they, but with God's help, they prevailed. We recall the works of Othniel, Ehud, and Shamgar. We cannot ignore the efforts of Deborah and Barak, Gideon, and yes, even Samson. Well, when the northern invader, Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and all his host, when they descend upon the mountains of Israel and plant their tents in his holy mountain, then a greater judge will lead a mighty host of redeemed, and they will confront the invader and prevail. Then writes the prophet in verse 5, the eyes shall be opened. The images of Isaiah 35, verse 5, are those of joy and exaltation. They have been saved from peril, even unspeakable violence. And sadly, they will be standing before the man who they as a nation so many years before had denied. Isaiah continues, the eyes shall be opened, the ears shall be unstopped, the lame shall leap, and the dumb shall sing. Christ performed many miracles during his ministry, including the healing of the blind, the healing of him who could not speak, and the man who had been crippled from his birth. Zechariah writes in chapter 12, in that day shall the Lord defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as David. And the house of David shall be as God, and the angel of the Lord before them. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplications. And they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. Yes, there are people who, although they can see perfectly well, cannot rightly discern the times or the seasons. And so Paul writes in Timothy, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. The prophet then writes in verse 8, an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools shall not err therein. The phrase, and an highway shall be there, is borrowed from another place where the prophet was referring to the coming up out of Egypt, and from the exiles who would be returning from Babylon. But here, in this verse 8 of Isaiah 35, he is looking far, far into the future. The prophet is looking forward to the reign of the Messiah, a time when, in the words of Isaiah in another place, he puts it this way, Isaiah 11, and there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord, and shall make him of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord. And he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove at the hearing of his ears. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth, and he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. You'll note also that in verse 8, as well as an highway, there is a way. A way. And highway shall be there, and a way. And it shall be called the way of holiness. While the word highway is in the strictest of sense a roadway, a place of passage, the word way carries a different meaning. Way comes to us from the Hebrew word derek, D-E-R-E-K, and carries the meaning of to tread, path, journey, direction, even course of life. The prophet even adds that the way is the way of holiness, wherein never shall the unclean pass. The meaning is very clear and is expressed elsewhere. We read from Matthew 7, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it." While there will be some natural Israel that will survive the invader, there will even be some Gentiles who are alive and will remain during the kingdom age. However, the prophet is very clear. He says, "The unclean shall not pass over it or walk thereon. Only those that are covenanted and redeemed or found pleasing will be allowed to freely walk the way of holiness." Now the prophet goes on to say, "But it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein." Wayfaring carries the meaning of course of life. Course of life. Or manner of life. Which is consistent with those who are found acceptable at the judgment seat. Jesus uses a parable to emphasize this point. Matthew 25, verse 21, he says, "His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou the joy of thy Lord." And then the rest of verse 8, "Thou fools, thou shalt not enter therein." Fools, the word, being translated as perverse, and therefore we have these words of Jesus, "Wherefore by their fruits ye shall know them. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father, which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have cast out devils? And in thy name done many wonderful works? Then will I profess unto them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. The prophet continues in verse 9, no lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go thereon. It shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. At one time, lions abounded in the Middle East, and the ancient scribes made reference to them with terms of dread and alarm. The language of Isaiah, then, is such that the way or manner of life of the redeemed will not be plagued with ravenous beasts. He then writes in chapter 11, the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the young lion, and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed. Their young ones shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the sucking child shall play on the hole of the asp. And the weaned child shall put his hand on a cockatrice den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. We mentioned earlier that the prophet borrowed language from another place where he was referring to the exiles from, where he's referencing the exiles returned from Babylon. But here there is the definite verse that he was indeed referring to the future. The redeemed shall walk there gives us the definite sense that the way is not for the profane, the polluted, the hypocrite. It is not for those who live for this world or for those who love pleasure more than they love God. It is made safe because the Redeemer has returned and shall rule with righteousness. Finally, we come to the beautiful sentiments expressed in verse 10. And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. And they shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. While the two words redeemed and ransomed are from two different Hebrew words, in the Hebrew, they do have similar meanings. Redeemed is from ge'al and carries the meaning of doing the part of a near kinsman. Ransomed is from the word padah, P-A-D-A-H, and carries the meaning of redeem, rescue, deliver. The sense being that you redeem one out of duty, but you ransom out of want to. We refer now to 2 Peter chapter 3 verse 9, where he says, the Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long suffering usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. We close our remarks on this wonderful chapter of Isaiah by commenting on the phrase, with everlasting joy upon their heads. We read from Psalm 122. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet shall stand within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Jerusalem is builded as a city that is compact together. Whither the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, unto the testimony of Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. For there are set thrones of judgments, thrones of the house of David. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, and they shall prosper that love thee. Peace be within thy walls, and prosperity within thy palaces. For my brethren and companions' sake, I will now say, peace be within thee. Because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek thy good. Or possibly these from the Psalm 126. When the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter, and our tongue with singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord hath done great things for them. The Lord hath done great things for us, whereof we are glad. Joy without foundation may be just a whisper in the wind. Joy based upon being a part of the fulfillment of God's promises is not fleeting, but lasts forever. And so, how can we say it any better than this? The ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away.